Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the board come the Irish.
Cubs win!
Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish has upset Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. News at the top of the hour brought to you by Sport Clips. You watch sports, they cut hair. It's perfect, Sport Clips. It's good to be a guy. 7 minutes after the top of the hour, along with Eric Hansen, he is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Coming up on the program this evening, you'll hear from three Notre Dame football assistant coaches who met the media earlier today. Eric spent some time with Notre Dame offensive line coach Harry Hiestand. So how are things looking at right tackle Tommy Kramer, Liam Eichenberg? Harry's thoughts on that? Stick around. We'll get to that coming up in just a couple of moments. Our next segment, a chance to hear from Fighting Irish quarterback coach Tom Reese. I was around Tommy for that conversation, so he'll talk about how good Wimbush has been this spring. And can tempo be something that is very helpful to Brandon Wimbush considering his athleticism? Answers on those storylines coming up in our next segment. We wrap up this hour with the My Five question of the day, the five things that Eric needs to see from the Fighting Irish defense before spring football ends. Offense was the focus of the My Five yesterday. We'll go to the defensive side with our My Five question of the day. And coming up next hour, we'll have a Fighting Irish hockey conversation. Jake Brown covers the Fighting Irish hockey team all year round. He's going to join us for a couple of moments in preparation for the Irish in the Frozen Four tomorrow at the United Center. You're also going to hear from Delvon Alexander, the Fighting Irish wide receiver coach. How good have the wide receivers been this spring? Well, Delvon will tell us coming up next hour. And much more other than just those particular topics here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. So we'll get to Harry coming up in just a second. First, a baseball update. The Cubs and Cardinals rained out in St. Louis. They're actually going to play tomorrow. Both teams have an off day. The Cubs don't have to be in Milwaukee until Friday. So the series finale between the Cubs and Cardinals tomorrow at 12:45. Same pitching matchup, John Lackey against Lance Lynn. Pretty good ball game last night down in St. Louis. Cubs won 2-1. From a Cubs perspective, Jake Arrieta looked really, really good in his opening start. Second half of last year, he was a little up and down with his control. Really good last night. And I think from the St. Louis perspective, even with them losing the ball game, to see Adam Wainwright pitch like the Adam Wainwright of a couple of years ago. I mean, he was not the greatest last year, well over a 4 ERA. Eric, to see Wainwright pitch like that, I think that has to give St. Louis fans a little hope that this could be a playoff team. If Adam Wainwright is a guy with an ERA 4.5 again, that makes the challenge a little more difficult for the Birds.
Yeah, there was a lot of really interesting things in that game, and the pitching, I think, topped the list. Stephen Piscotty becoming kind of a human pinball slash target or whatever, running around the bases, that was kind of weird. Mora's catch in center field was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cardinal fans were hoping that John Jay could have been in on that play. but it's been a really fun series, even mm-hmm. though it's been low scoring, you know, relatively so far.
Lackey and Lynn tomorrow. Two guys that no doubt show their emotions on their sleeves, so that could be very interesting tomorrow afternoon. For the White Sox, another postponement, just like opening day. Tigers and White Sox will try it again tomorrow. First pitch at 2:10 on the south side of Chicago. I have to stop myself every time we talk about the White Sox. I want to say U.S. Cellular Field. Now it's what? Guaranteed Rate Field. It's going to take a while for that to sink in.
What is the guaranteed rate? Is it insurance or
I honestly have not looked that up. I do not know.
Okay.
But if I'm a White Sox fan, that's the last thing I want to see as the name of my stadium. Just, it can bring up tickets, and you can get them cheap, and, and they don't get many fans. But
well, there's a couple other products that I think could be worse, but they are medical products, so... of the other things left, I think
any
that's
come to mind you'd like to mention?
No. One starts with preparation.
Oh, you're going down that road. I see. Okay. Well, that is probably a good thing. So we found one product that is worse than what the White Sox have. So White Sox and Tigers tomorrow at 2:10 at the facility formerly known as U.S. Cellular Field. And then you have one game in baseball today that actually was played, and it was Minnesota hammering Kansas City 9-1 up in the Twin Cities. Notre Dame and the South Bend Cubs were scheduled to have an exhibition game today. That has been postponed due to the weather. And what we're hearing, we could see 3 to 6 inches tomorrow for the South Bend Cubs opener in West Michigan. We'll hear from Harry Hiestand, the Irish offensive line coach, in just a second. Right now, let's go live to the United Center just for a moment to check in on the Fighting Irish hockey team's Frozen Four press conference. Irish head coach Jeff Jackson right now answering questions from the media in attendance.
Things have changed a lot since the Lake State days in college hockey. You know, I think that when I started at Notre Dame, I honestly believed that, you know, it was a real diamond in the rough. It was a program that had so much potential, obviously, with the name recognition and the tradition and the great education that you get at Notre Dame. I figured it would be a great place to recruit. And we've had success. I mean, we still, you know, you want to win national championships. You want to win championships. I think that for us, it's we've been close, and I've said that before. Like the times we've won at Lake State, it seems everything falls into place for you. You know, it's a number of different things. There's a lot of things that are out of your control, but there's some things that are in your control, and if you manage those things that are within your control, then you can win. And the things outside your control, you know, have cost us at times. I mean, we've been in the Frozen Four a few times at Notre Dame, and you know, I think that you know, I think back to our first trip when we went to Denver. You know, we were playing without our captain, our best player Eric Condra, and you know, that team did a great job getting there, and they were a four seed as well. So we knocked off Michigan in the semifinal, who was number one overall, and you know, that was quite a feather in that team's hat. You know, but we had a tough time the next night against Boston, or the next day against Boston College. And the last time we played, we ran into a good Duluth team. It was the last time we played Manchester, too. But the thing is that you got to put yourself in position to win championships, whether it's finishing in the top four or your conference to get a bye and then the home ice. You got to make the NCAA tournament. You have to put yourself in position to win the tournament. To win a championship. And that's what our goal is at Notre Dame every year, is to put ourselves in position to win a championship, whether it's a conference championship or a national championship, is to put ourselves in that position. And then all those things have to fall into place. And as coaches, we try to make sure the things that are within our control, that we manage those things. And the things that are outside of our control, there's nothing we can do about. So we just, every year it's different, but this year's team is certainly different than the first two that made it to the Frozen Four.
Dave, here in front.
Dave Hendrickson, U.S. College Hockey Online. Can you talk about your connection with Jimmy Montgomery? First, you know, he was maybe the guy who kept you from winning three championships in a row at Lake State, and then he learns from you, and now he's gone from student to being the guy you've got to knock off.
I mean, that's one of the great, you know, things about coaching, is that, you know, you're not only watching your former players go on to play in the National Hockey League and maybe be All-Stars or Hall of Famers, but you're also watching the guys that, you know, that went on to be doctors and, you know, presidents of companies and their families. And but there's also that third aspect, and you know, people that work for you as assistant coaches, people that help you and hopefully you help them. And with Jimmy, you know, I mean, going way back to 1993, I was just teasing the other guys talking about it wasn't Jim Montgomery, it was Paul Kariya, but Jimmy just so happened to be at the other end of the passes. But we get along great. He's a great young coach. He's got a great future ahead of him. You know, he's got all the right aspects to being a great coach. And I'm proud of him. I'm happy for him. Tomorrow we'll go head to head, and whatever happens. I remember a lot of great games between Sean Walsh and Ron Mason too. You know, those things happen. You know, it's part of coaching. You know, you develop coaches and you end up competing against them. Yesterday I recruited a kid whose son played for, or his dad played for me. So that tells you, you know, you're going full circle. So, but that's the great thing about coaching. It's the relationships that you establish, and it's, you know, it's been my life. And to see him be successful is a great part of that.
Jim Montgomery is the head coach of Denver, named Coach of the Year, I believe it was yesterday, and volunteer assistant coach with the Irish in 2005, working for Jeff Jackson, and now they will square off in the national semifinals tomorrow at 9:30 on ESPN, and I'll have the call on C94.3 FM. And strangely enough, in the 93 championship game, Eric Hansen, Jim Montgomery, who went on to have a great NHL career, was a forward for the Maine Black Bears, taking on Lake State in the championship game in 93. Jeff Jackson, the head coach of Lake State, and Montgomery scored a third period hat trick to help Maine beat Jeff Jackson and the Lakers. And had the Lakers won that game, Jeff would have won three consecutive national championships, because he won in 92 and 94. So there's some interesting history between the two head coaches that will square off tomorrow night at the United Center in Chicago. And from what I understand, there's going to be a huge Notre Dame crowd at the United Center, which is very exciting, considering a lot of these regionals, Eric, nobody goes to them. They're too expensive, and the travel isn't very good. So to have a huge Notre Dame fan base there is just going to be really, really awesome for our guys, and we'll see if we can get it done. All the pressure's on Denver. They are just like Carolina in basketball. They made it to the semifinals last year, lost, and it's been their mission to get back to the Frozen Four and win it. So hopefully they'll put a little extra pressure on themselves, because we'll take all the advantages we can get at this point.
Well, I'm glad you were pronouncing some of the Denver players' names yesterday, because I saw one of them had two dots over the O, and we don't have those in football, so I wasn't quite sure how to...
You don't have those in Ohio?
Yeah, exactly.
We'll just go with Borgstrom. Yeah. Everybody has been saying an outstanding freshman for Denver. All right, let's get to some Fighting Irish football conversation. Harry Hiestand, the Fighting Irish offensive line coach, he met the media earlier today. And Eric, you were part of the conversation over at the Goog, a chance to talk to the outstanding offensive line coach of the Fighting Irish. And you asked Harry a little bit about last year and how you build on last year. What are you working on right now to get better? And here is what Harry Hiestand had to say to our Eric Hansen earlier today.
What we've been working really hard on is consistency, and that obviously kind of answers your question.
Right.
But this group, we're really focused on, you know, being on the same page at all times and seeing things through one set of eyes. And when Dante Scarnecchia was here a few years ago, before he retired from the New England Patriots, and they since brought him back, but he was retired and a friend that's a line coach. And that was one of the things in a meeting with our players that I asked him to say a few words, and he said that. He goes, "You guys need to be committed to seeing it through one set of eyes," and that was his words, "and that when we look at a defense, we all see the same thing. We all make the same adjustments, and we don't have to speak. We just do it because our eyes are telling us." And that's the growth that we've been challenging them. And I've seen more of that right now, and we're on the right track.
Obviously, Eric, there were ups and downs for the offensive line last year. New parts on the right side. The left side didn't play to the consistent level as we expected. And I would assume they would probably say the same thing if they had to answer the question about themselves. Is it going to take a major fix from Harry Hiestand to get this back to an acceptable level? Would you call this an overhaul, since they're moving Bars to right guard and possibly bringing in a new starter at right tackle? How would you assess the complexity of getting this thing back to what we expect along the offensive line?
Yeah, I actually have a story up right now on ndinsider.com. I wrote about this after talking to Harry today. You know, I think the first thing is cohesion, that they had to have better cohesion as a unit. You would have, I think what Harry was alluding to, you'd have Mike McGlinchey looking out at a defense seeing one thing, the right guard seeing something completely different, them calling it, barking out different protections, you know, and so you weren't functioning as one. I think that was a big problem. When you look at just individual things, you know, McGlinchey had all those false start penalties. You know, Harry ended up talking about how he's gone about fixing those. You had Sam Mustafer, who had two games of really some, you know, unfortunate plays. He had a safety in the Stanford game, snapping it through the end zone. He had a snap in a monsoon, and there were some unfortunate plays. But his rebound, the way that kid responded to that adversity, I mean, he was like a huge leader in their winter offseason program, remade his whole body, got himself together, fixed the problem. But not only did he fix the problem, he took his game to another level. And then you look at the right side of the line, and I just think they're stronger. You know, they had kind of a rotation at right guard where they never were really comfortable. You know, Colin McGovern was probably their best option there. He was hurt so much of the year. You know, Hunter Bivin was in there. You know, and Hunter, Colin McGovern ended up transferring to Virginia because I think he heard the footsteps. He knew that Bars was going to move inside. And then you had these two prodigies that were kind of incubating for a whole year, waiting to come out, and they are going to, I mean, from a talent standpoint, and I think from a work ethic too, you know, these are two of the best players in Ohio in the 2016 class. Urban Meyer wanted both of them, and they both got away, and they're battling each other to be that right tackle. You know, do I think everything is solved with the offensive line? I don't know that I would say that. But I do think that they are definitely moving in the right direction. So I think all those little things are kind of adding up. And I think one other thing that I'll throw in there is, you know, Tyler James asked Harry about the tempo and how that might help them. And Harry thinks strategically that is going to help them. From the standpoint, remember we thought that we kept kind of hearing the recurring problem of pre-snap movement was kind of what was vexing them at a lot of times last year. Well, you get tempo, they don't have time to move. They're trying to react to your formations, how you're lining up. They're making their calls. Well, if you're snapping the ball before they have all that process done, you're at a big advantage. And I think Harry is seeing that in the spring. Even though it's against his own defensive line, he's able to see that that's going to be an advantage for them.
I love the story he told answering one of your questions today. You asked him about, did he ever want to be a coordinator right. or a head coach, or were you just so fascinated and enjoyed coaching offensive line that you just stayed there? And he mentioned at Cincinnati that he was the coordinator
right.
and had such a headache
yeah.
from the experience yeah. that that's enough. Yeah. Let's go back to offensive line work.
You know, interestingly, he was a rousing success as a coordinator. They improved about 50 spots in offensive scoring. They went from a 3-8 team to 8-3. And then the year after he relinquished it, they dropped 60 spots the other way. Now, wow. he left Cincinnati to go to Missouri, but this was under Tim Murphy in 1993, so he was really good at it, but he hated it. He said, I felt like I wasn't even at the game. I'm stuck up in the press box. I can't interact with my players. And he said, you know what? I realized what my true calling was.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett recapping some of the comments of Notre Dame offensive line coach Harry Hiestand from earlier today. Now, Alex Bars was the Irish's starting right tackle last season. He's been moved to right guard. So Harry was asked today, can we pencil it in? Alex Bars, your starting right guard.
Alex could play both. I mean, Alex could be good at both. So I don't know if I'd be able to say it was his best position, but he's really learning guard and doing well right now. So, you know, right, that's what's best for us.
That's what's best for us. Is that basically saying he's going to be our starter. Do you think there's any doubt at this point?
I don't think there's any doubt unless there's an injury. You know, they toyed with the idea of how does Hunter Bivin fit into this mix. Hunter was both in the right tackle and right guard mix last year. Would the young guys, would Eichenberg and Kramer be better inside and Bars outside? And the tackle, the two young guys are just so physical and I think play well in space that became the decision. I mean, I think they could flip it around if things weren't working out early in the season, but I just don't see them doing it. Bars was really good when he had to fill in for Quentin Nelson for a couple of games in 2015, but then ended up getting hurt himself.
If everything keeps going in the direction we believe it will for the starting lineup for the offensive line, to me, in 2017, I think you can possibly say they have their best five offensive linemen on the field. I don't think we could have said that last year, and right. I don't think they had the best five on the field, but it sure seems like that might be the case this year, although you could argue the loser of the Kramer-Eichenberg battle is really good enough to be a starter. We're just running out of spots.
Running out of spots. You know, Tristan Hodge has surged, but again, correct, can't overtake Mustafer. Mustafer has improved too much. And then you have the real young guys, which they're not going to push out there unless they needed to, but Robert Hainsey and Aaron Banks have been really impressive early on, so you feel good about their future, but they're really not part of the present. You know, I still kind of want to see when Aaron Taylor comes to town what his assessment is, but the fact that Harry was pretty upbeat about it, Harry's a pretty good barometer of what's going on with them. He's not going to sugarcoat if there's problems. And
he's not going to talk about last year.
He wasn't going to talk about last year. I asked him about last year, and he did not want to put words to that. So I think that kind of was a pretty good commentary in and of itself.
Tells the story. So let's get to right tackle. Tommy Kramer, Liam Eichenberg, two interesting talents battling for one starting position. Here is the offensive line coach, Harry Hiestand.
Yeah, Tommy and Liam both worked tremendously hard to put themselves in a position of competition. That's what they're doing. They're competing really well. They both have good qualities about them, the basic fundamental things that you're looking for in players. They've got a great work ethic. They got a great attitude. They have ability, and now it's just time.
Now it is time. So since you're the unofficial leader of the Tommy Kramer fan club, I think, to be fair, why don't you offer a thought or two on Eichenberg, who is a guy that is surging at this particular moment and a guy that's offering excellent competition for Tommy Kramer and vice versa?
Liam is a guy, he wasn't as highly touted in high school for whatever reason, played at a really good program up in Cleveland. You know, last year when he was redshirting, kind of was stuck around the 270 mark. Once he was able to put on some weight in the offseason and get up into the 290s, then he was on a more level playing field with Tommy Kramer, who's 6'6", 313. Liam goes 6'6", 294. I think Liam probably handles space a little bit better than Tommy Kramer.
Okay.
I think Tommy handles being a road grader.
So he's more the brawler.
Right. He's the brawler. If it's a running game, I think he's the better of the two. If it's a passing game, Liam probably has a little bit of the edge. I think each of them are working on the soft spot in their game, which isn't very soft, but I think that's what differentiates them. So it's kind of a race as who can become that complete right tackle.
Finally, let's talk about Sam Mustafer. You asked a question about the Fighting Irish starting center, and I thought this was one of the more interesting answers. And there were a lot of good answers from Harry today, but I picked out at least one thing I found very interesting that Harry said as he talked about center Sam Mustafer.
First of all, it's about, you're talking about a very small number of plays that Sam really fouled up. Timing of them weren't great, but you're not talking about a total guy fall apart, can't function with the guy. So that was part of it, just pointing out that hey, this is this is easily fixed by you. And he believed that, and he did it, and he stuck with it, and Coach Kelly stuck with him. And so let's stay in reality. As bad as all that was, we're talking about, we can put them on a clip of about five plays. So we've had, you know, 550, okay? So that are decent. So we just work from there, and he's an awesome young man, and you know, he's got great personal pride, and the last thing he needed was anybody to pile on him, and you know, we worked through it. And because he can do it. Wasn't like he couldn't do it. He just had a couple bad stretches there.
Now there's the leader of the Sam Mustipher fan club right there.
Yeah.
He feels like it was just a few plays, and a couple of them, unfortunately, were in huge parts of games that might have changed the complexion of games. Mustipher took some criticism from his head coach, but you could see there Harry Heaston is fully behind Sam Mustipher and pointing out, we're just talking about a few plays. It's not like there's 50 plays where Sam had issues last year.
Yeah, this is a guy that had never played center before he came to Notre Dame. He was an outstanding prospect both ways on the East Coast. In fact, he was a good counsel, which is a great high school program. He's the first player in the last 47 years, which is his retired coach Bob Malloy's time. He's the first one to come to Notre Dame. Now, he's got a younger brother, but the younger brother goes to a different high school, McDonough. The younger brother is a defensive tackle, and his Twitter page is kind of funny. He lists his location not as Maryland, but as sacking your quarterback. Sam could have played either side of the ball. In fact, his first four offers were for defense, so he's kind of got that mentality. But he's a guy that not only recovered from this bad stretch of football, he used it to drive himself to become one of the more improved players on the team. Because I was fully expecting Tristan Hodge to really give him a challenge this spring, and their separation between those two, as well as Tristan's practiced.
Harry Heaston, Fighting Irish offensive line coach, met the media today. You can check out Eric's article on the offensive line right now at IndyInsider.com, and I guarantee you it'll be in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. 27 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Coming up next, the Fighting Irish spring football conversation continues. You'll hear from a former Irish starting quarterback now in charge of getting Brandon Wimbush ready. You'll hear from Tom Reese coming up next as Sports Beat continues. Presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Buy Sport Clips. You watch sports. They cut hair. It's perfect. Sport Clips, it's good to be a guy. By Legacy Heating and Air. And by Harold Ziegler Ford Lincoln and Elkhart on 2525 Bypass Road or at zford.com.
Take us with you in and out of the car. Download the free WSBT radio app from the iTunes or Droid App Store. Listen live anywhere.
Minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. He is Eric Hansen, and he is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm the titleist, Darren Pritchett. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday evening. If you have not heard, the South Bend Cubs Notre Dame baseball exhibition game scheduled for 6 o'clock, postponed due to weather. And considering the possibility of 3 to 6 inches north of the border in Comstock Park, Michigan, I would say it's very unlikely the South Bend Cubs and the West Michigan Whitecaps will be playing tomorrow in the regular season opener. It's hard to play a baseball game as the Whitecaps when I'm not sure there's going to be any Whitecaps. So we'll see what happens. But if that game takes place, you'll hear it on WSBT Radio tomorrow night at 6:35. Sean Stiers will have the call. I'll be heading over to the United Center in just about an hour to get set for the Irish in the Frozen Four National Semifinals tomorrow night at 9:30 against the Denver Pioneers. So the WSBT radio group will be busy tomorrow one way or the other. We continue to focus on Notre Dame football spring practice. We're coming down the stretch now of spring practice. And today we had the chance to hear from former Fighting Irish starting quarterback Tom Rees. He is now in charge of working with the quarterbacks, and eventually, once the vote takes place, he will be the 10th assistant coach on Brian Kelly's staff. But no matter what happens with that vote, he said today, I am here to work with the quarterbacks, and he is very, very happy to be working with this group. Of course, the spotlight is on the brand new starting quarterback, Brandon Wimbush. So first things first, Tom Rees, your impressions of Brandon Wimbush this spring?
Yeah, I think Brandon's doing a really nice job. The one thing that jumps out is really dedicating himself to learning, you know, what we're trying to coach, and, you know, really doing a great job outside of the, you know, meeting structure and, you know, practice structure of studying and getting in the playbook and understanding what we're doing. He's taking a bunch of steps mentally throughout the spring. You know, physically you see the talent there, and it's just, you know, it's our job to make sure that, you know, having consistent days, putting everything together. But from a maturity standpoint and the standpoint of really, you know, grasping everything, he's been outstanding. You know, he's been a pleasure to work with, and, you know, he's a great kid that is eager to learn and wants to be really good. Now it's teaching him how that preparation and how that works. And, you know, every day he's come out, and, you know, there's teaching moments, of course, and there's some, you know, flashes, some great plays, but, you know, just trying to stay consistent one day at a time and just get a little bit better each practice.
Eric, we know that Brandon Wimbush has tremendous arm strength. The ball just flies out of his hand. And I think when Irish fans see him once again in a game situation, they will see it's a stronger arm than what Deshaun Kizer had. And Deshaun Strong is very, very above average. And you think about his running skills. We saw the UMass game 2 years ago, just ran away from the secondary, had a 50-plus yard touchdown run against the Minutemen. We haven't seen that in a little while. We'll see it against Temple in a few months. But when you think about his athleticism, the play breaks down, Eric. All of a sudden, someone loses an assignment. Someone picks up the wrong blitzer, and someone is coming after Brandon Wimbush. I think that is a part of his game that could be a huge plus for this football team. Now, Kizer could scramble around. He could run. But do you feel like that when a play breaks down, the Irish now have a quarterback that can truly burn the opposition and make something out of nothing? Or am I putting too much expectations on a guy that has not even started his first college football game yet?
Well, I think Deshaun did a pretty good job of that, but it looked different. I think Deshaun could get you a broken play and get you maybe a first down, get you a few yards, make a gain out of what looked like might be a loss. What Wimbush has is the ability to hit home runs out of those spots. Now, he's not going to do it every time, and he may make a mistake or he may get a loss, but you could end up with a broken play that goes for a 75-yard touchdown based on his legs or, again, that powerful arm. You know, if his receivers keep, you know, kind of churning around and trying to get open, he can see someone down the field and he can hit them that far down the field. You know, and just what we've seen, I haven't seen him struggle with that yet. You know, again, maybe when we watch Friday's practice, we'll see that for the first time, but we haven't seen it to this point.
Maybe the question I should ask is, he's in the pocket, is he going to stay there? Is he going to have the ability to know when to go and when to get out of the pocket and then try to make something happen? You'll see many times young quarterbacks, whether it's college or the NFL, they'll get those happy feet and they'll sense pressure coming before it's even close to them, and they'll head out of dodge, try to make something out of nothing. I think it'll be fun to see where Brandon is in that process. Is he a guy that's going to stand in there and wait till that last second? Remember how Randall Cunningham for the Eagles used to do that? He would stand there and at the last second he'd spin away and he'd run around, he would make a play. I think that will be fun to see once the regular season gets underway where he is in that particular process, because that's very, very important. You got to wait as long as you can in the pocket.
The last stretch that we've really seen of Brandon Wimbush, I hate to bring up high school because, you know, he's been at Notre Dame. This will be his third year. But we haven't seen a lot of that. So, you know, the longest stretch I've seen is at St. Peter's Prep, looking back over his film. And going into the state championship game his senior year, I believe he had not been sacked once. Now, that's a testament to both his offensive line and him making good decisions and getting down the field. In the championship game, they faced Paramus Catholic, which had Rashawn Gary, who's going to be the next name you hear about, you know, stud defensive lineman that's going to go high in the draft in a couple of drafts from now. But Rashawn sacked him a couple times. But Brandon also had 150 yards rushing in that game, which was about 20% of his whole year's total in one game. And that's what made me look at him. I mean, I watched that whole state championship game, and the decision-making just was incredible on his part. Now, again, you have to translate that to better, faster, stronger athletes, but he had less of a gap to cover just because of how good the competition was in his part of the country.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. So let's take a step back now for people just getting into football mode. Maybe you don't remember Brandon Wimbush playing 2 years ago for about a quarter and a half against Massachusetts. What are the strengths of Brandon Wimbush's game at the quarterback position? When Tom Reese was asked this today, he kind of chuckled at first. It was one of those chuckles. Well, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to talk about. But here's what Reese had to say about the guy he works with every day, Brandon Wimbush.
First of all, he's an awesome kid, and that's the first thing you want, is someone that wants to learn and wants to be there and wants to, you know, get better. And, you know, the guys respect him, and, you know, really, you know, he has a good presence to him. So that's the first thing that you want. Second of all, you know, when you get to the physical attributes, there really isn't a throw he can't make. You know, when his feet are set and he's doing that, there's really not a, you know, whole lot he can't do. And then his athletic ability, you know, extending plays and being able to, you know, be on the move is great. Now, he needs to work on his consistency with accuracy and, you know, ball placement. And, you know, he's got to understand, you know, running, you know, protecting the football and, you know, getting down and knowing your run lanes and understanding situational football and what we're trying to accomplish. So, you know, there's a lot of very great things to work with, and there's a lot of things we got to bring him up, you know, and get that consistent level of, you know, hey, this is your expectation, and we're not ever going to, you know, get below that, you know, that we're going to hold you to this every single day, every single rep.
That's a pretty good answer. Anything you'd like to add?
I think that's
he covered it well.
Yeah, I think he's going to give an honest assessment. You know, this is a talkative side of Tom Reese that I had never seen as a player before.
He was great today.
Yeah.
He was really, really good.
I think the most conversation we ever had is I used to run into him at a restaurant when I was picking up some to-go order. Zach Martin and Tyler Eifert and Tommy would be coming out and I'd be coming in. So we would have a little conversation, and that was about the most I heard from him.
Well, he is really someone that was very comfortable in front of the media today, and I think he's just very excited to be back here. I don't think he expected to be back this quick. It was a goal, but here he is. Great opportunity to work with this quarterback room. So let's talk about tempo. You mentioned what Harry Hiestand had to say about tempo and how he feels like it could be an advantage for his offensive line. How helpful can tempo be for quarterback Brandon Wimbush? Here's Tom Reese.
I think it can definitely assist a young quarterback, but at the same time, we want to play fast. We also want the quarterback to control. We don't want him to be out of control and too frantic. We want everyone to be ready to go, and he controls the tempo for us. So we're going to go at his speed. We want that speed to be fast. You know, we want him to start be able to process things and, you know, keep going fast. But at the same time, he's got to be able to execute the offense within that tempo. So for him, you know, he's done a great job of understanding what we're trying to do when we go fast and, you know, getting up to the line, making the right calls. And there's times he needs to take a step back. He's done that. You know, do we want him to get to a point where we don't need to? Sure, but he's going to play at his tempo.
You think tempo with a quarterback of Brandon Wimbush's skills, I mean, once he gets everything set in his mind, right, that's an advantage to
absolutely
you guys?
Absolutely, especially athletically. And then, you know, the defensive scrambling, if they make one mistake and, you know, we have a pull read or something, he can take off, and, you know, before you know it, he's down the field. So I think with his skill set, being able to go fast and being able to execute the offense is definitely to our advantage.
That's Tom Reese talking about Wimbush and how tempo could be a huge bonus. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And when we had a chance to talk to Brandon about a week or so ago, he said that was what he was used to in high school. And again, he said, you know, I don't mean to go back to high school, but So he has a comfort level. It's been there before. Obviously, again, he's doing it at a different level. But in the practices that we've seen, I just haven't seen him get flustered to this point. And I think they're asking a lot of him. You know, I think the mirage for me last August was when we watched Kaiser and Zaire. They looked very even because Zaire was allowed to play to his strengths and Kaiser was allowed to play to his strengths. But Notre Dame's offense wasn't what Kaiser or Zaire's strengths were. When we're watching Wimbush, we're watching him not only work on his strengths, but work on his weaknesses, and he still looks good. It's hard for you to tell which, you know, what's the weakness. You know, it's hard for you to say, oh, well, here's where he's got to improve. Because, again, it's been so fluid and so smooth. Now, the other quarterbacks, there's a ways to go. There's a big gap. There's a chasm right now.
And later in the week, we'll get to what Tom Reese had to say about the backup, Ian Book. So we'll get to that at a future date. Let me wrap up this segment. I think this is a piece of information that Irish fans are wondering during your chats. You get this asked a lot. You've got the brand new offensive coordinator, Chip Long. He is in charge of calling the plays. So you hear all the time, well, how much of this is Brian Kelly's offense? How much of it is Chip Long's offense? Now, Brian established recently in one of his press conferences, and I'll paraphrase, that the foundation of what they're going to do is Brian Kelly's offense, but there's going to be Chip Long personality brought into this offense. And the point that Brian made was, Chip Long, when he has a fantastic year this year, someone's going to hire him as a head coach. You don't want to start all over, basically. So Brian Kelly's offense is still the foundation. Tom Reese knows all about running Brian Kelly's offense. So he was asked today how different the systems are, the one he used and the one he's teaching now. Here's Tom Reese, the Fighting Irish quarterback coach.
Yeah, I mean, the offense took a lot of, when I was, you know, here, we went through a lot of different, you know, kind of phases of what we were doing. A lot of it was personnel-based. You know, obviously I wasn't running zone read and all that. You know, the offense conceptually, you know, it's still, you know, Coach Kelly, and, you know, you still see the aspects there, but, you know, Coach Long's brought a lot of, you know, his stuff to what we're doing, and, you know, obviously you see that we want to play fast, and, you know, there's some, you know, details here and there that Coach Long does a great job of coaching up, and it's been a great blend to work with, and, you know, it's a very fun offense to play in. You know, it puts a lot on the quarterback and understanding what, you know, we're trying to do, and I would have loved to play in it, but, you know, you still see the same, you know, structure of the offense. Now Coach Long comes in and adds his, you know, his mix into it, and, you know, it's been a great job of learning from him and seeing, you know, what he's really applied and the finer details that he's coached up.
Well, it sure seems like running the football, being physical, is a priority. We're going to probably talk about tempo a lot with the offense, but really, it all comes down to being able to run the football better. It just wasn't good enough last year after 2 years ago, one of the great rushing seasons in Notre Dame history.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many factors that go into it. I think still the unknown for me in terms of the running game is how much, I mean, Brian Kelly's hinted at it, but how much are they really going to use Wimbush and planned runs? And what exactly that's going to look like. I've taken a stab at what I think it's going to look like, but until I see it, you know, and we see some practices, but there's stuff that they do in practice they're not going to show us. You
Are
know.
They fooling you?
Yeah, they know the days we're in there, and they know the days we're not in there.
Well, it's going to be fun to see the evolution of Brandon Wimbush. We've heard about his talents for some time. We got a little sample against UMass 2 years ago. He's the guy for the Fighting Irish this fall. My five question of the day is coming up next. The five things that Eric has to see banging the table for from the Irish defense before spring football ends. Answers coming up next on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question. Five answers. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats, my five question of the day on 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
The five things Eric needs to see from the Irish defense before spring practice ends. We begin with number five.
The one thing I wish I could have on this list is bells and whistles, but we're not going to be shown that. So I'll settle for number five. seeing a project graduate, meaning a Jameer Jones, Brandon Tissom, Ade Ogundeji, one of those guys kind of really step forward and get involved in the depth chart. And I think probably of that group that I mentioned, Jameer Jones is the closest.
Number four.
I want to see the Rover in action. I want to see him rush the passer. I want to see all the things that he does, especially rushing the passer, because I want to see how this is really going to impact the game.
Going through the five things Eric needs to see from the Irish defense before spring practice ends. Number three.
Consistency, playmaking, and quality depth at the safety position. There's plenty of bodies. There's not a lot of playmakers right now. And that's one of the reasons why Nick Coleman is starting, although he's done very well.
Number two.
Number two, I need to see stage two of the pass rush. Stage one is investing in the players that are your best athletes. We see that. Now I need to see Dalen Hayes have a few glimpses where he does get to Mike McGlinchey. I know that's a difficult task, but they're putting him out there for a reason, and he's a really good athlete. He's got to win some of those battles, and so do some of the other pass rushers.
And the number one thing on your list, something you need to see from the Irish defense before spring practice ends.
Out of this group, Tillery, Cage, Bonner, Micah Dutredway, one or all of those guys need to step forward and start showing dominance and run stoppage.
That is today's My 5 Question of the Day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, I've got a story that's looking at a comprehensive look at how Harry Hiestand is trying to straighten the offensive line problems from last year. Steve Lowe has the Frozen Four hockey advance, Notre Dame versus Denver. We were going to have a story on the South Bend Cubs versus the Notre Dame baseball exhibition, but I don't think that game's being played. And we'll have much, much more of things that actually are played and not canceled.
I won't see you, but I'll talk to you tomorrow.
That sounds great.
That's Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Read his offensive line story right now at IndyInsider.com. Sports Beat continues after a CBS Sports update.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Jackson with a spectacular spin move. And now the no-look pass to Zach August with a two-handed slam.
Adios. Two-run home run, Gleyber Torres.
Kaiser look, timing pattern.
Caught. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT, 7 minutes after the top of the hour. Well, Mother Nature winning the battle right now. The Irish baseball team and the South Bend Cubs were supposed to play an exhibition game right now, but weather has postponed slash canceled that particular event. It will not be made up. So we have to hope for, do you believe in miracles, weather 360 change because 3 to 6 inches possible up in Michigan.
Man.
And that's where the South Bend Cubs regular season opener is supposed to be tomorrow night at 6:35 on WSBT Radio. So I'm not sure what you're going to be doing tomorrow. I wonder if there'll even be a bus ride up there.
I'm not either, and that's the conversation that I had yesterday when I went over to media day is, are we even going to get on the bus and go anywhere? Because, and just based on what it's supposed to do and looking at the radar map right now, I mean, there's a lot of junk bearing down on us right now. And when you talk about cold weather and snow, the Grand Rapids area is just as susceptible to lake effect snow and the whole thing as we are. And it's not supposed to be any better up there tomorrow. So baseball is not looking very good right now. Anywhere across the Midwest right now, if you're thinking about playing baseball or watching baseball, yeah, good luck with that.
But Saturday looks good for the Cubs home opener, about 57, and I'm told 72 on Sunday, so much, much better.
That's looking a lot better.
Last 2 years, we've had the home opener for the regular season opener. This was a good year not to have the home opener. We had snow the first two games last year. We had to
I think, canceled the game in the sixth inning in game two last year because the center fielder couldn't see the ball anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it was snowing?
It was snowing so bad.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it was a rough start. And, of course, 2 years ago, the debut of the South Bend Cubs, it was raining all day, and I kid you not, Andrew Berlin, the owner of the South Bend Cubs, and Theo Epstein, Mr. Wonderful,
mm-hmm.
the most powerful guy in the world.
Pretty much.
Chicago Cubs. They walk out from underneath the stadium to throw out the ceremonial first pitches. The sun comes out and ends up being 72 degrees.
Can't beat that. The magic man, Theo, just waving his wand.
Everything he touches right now looking awfully good, except for Jason Hayward maybe. But you know what? They still got a ring, so that doesn't matter. And that swing change has not helped him. He still cannot touch a fastball above his hands. It is not pretty right now.
I know. And that's, I mean, when you think about what he tried to do, he tried to completely revamp his swing in a span of about 3 months. And I just don't know that you can do that, because when you talk about muscle memory and just the way your body is trained, at some point, I think those old habits are going to creep back in. I just don't know that you can do that. I mean, he's got to stay on it every day in the cage and stuff like that, and I'm sure he's going to try to, but there was a lot to overhaul based on what we saw from him last year, and it just hasn't looked good so far.
He had a bloop hit for an RBI last night, and I say this jokingly, 100% jokingly. You know when you played Little League and like the number 9 hitter came up, you just want to bring all the outfielders into the infield dirt?
That's right.
Just because you knew that he wasn't going to hit it that far? Uh-huh. Now Jason can obviously, when he makes contact, he can hit a long way, but you almost feel like you want to bring the outfield in because he's just not hitting the ball hard. He's not squaring it up, and he dunked one in for an RBI hit. Looks great in the box score, but
still says RBI, but yeah.
It sure does.
You figure for the money that you're paying him, I mean, you can't rely on dinks and dunks. He's got to have at least 90 RBIs a year for what he's getting paid. And
great defense and runs the base as well. They'll hang their hat on that until he figures out the hitting.
Yeah.
And you know what? Their lineup's pretty doggone good. You could put me or you in the lineup instead of Jason Hayward, and they're still going to be one of the best lineups in Major League Baseball.
That's it. They've got enough otherwise.
Go catch the ball. I saw a stat. Through the first two games of the series against St. Louis, with Schwarber leading off, Bryant second, Rizzo third, they are averaging 13 pitches seen combined every time they come to the plate. I mean, it's just remarkable. The plate discipline is just phenomenal.
And that's the thing. Coming out of the box right now, even though they haven't scored that many runs, when you're seeing that amount of pitches on a day-in, day-out basis, it's going to just start accumulating just like it did last year, and that was obviously without Schwarber even last year.
And Bryant's 0 for St. Louis right now, so someone's going to pay very soon. They're going to play again tomorrow after getting rained out today, so
it all evens out in baseball.
Oh, someone's going to pay very, very soon. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you as we've been talking about the last 9 days, the Irish hockey team and the Frozen Four. We're now about 27 hours away from the national semifinal, Notre Dame taking on Denver. And we've got Jake Brown from Irish Illustrated joining us. He covers the Irish. He's pretty much at every home game and does a great job of writing about the Irish at irishillustrated.com. And by golly, we have the Irish Illustrated Hour tonight with
That's
Tim
true.
Priester and Tim O'Malley. We're being overtaken by Irish Illustrateders, if that's the proper way to say that.
Like, why not?
Indianians or whatever.
Uh-huh.
How about just Hoosiers? All right, let's go to Jake and talk a little hockey. Jake, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are fantastic. We greatly appreciate your time. I would like to ask you this. You've spent a lot of time covering this Irish hockey team. You've spent a lot of time in press conferences, maybe more than anybody in this area, around Fighting Irish head coach Jeff Jackson. I just love your perception of who Jeff Jackson is, not only the hockey coach, but he's also a guy that I think people are surprised by. He has a really, really good sense of humor. You know, I don't know how many times I've gotten the question, well, he never smiles on the bench. Is he always is he grumpy in a bad mood? When actually, Jake, he's one of the more pleasant people to be around.
He is, yeah. I've been covering the hockey program, I guess, now for almost 10 years. Seems kind of ridiculous to me, but he doesn't give that vibe off publicly often, but you definitely get a sense of his sense of humor. He's got kind of a dry wit. He loves to talk about Tigers baseball when you get a chance. Yeah, he's just a real, he's a more personable guy than people think, and I think he's a more relaxed guy maybe now because he has a good feel for his team, and you know, his program is obviously in tip-top shape right now.
Jake, when you think about this team, say, 2 months ago, end of January, beginning of February, would you have said this is a Frozen Four team?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, it's funny because, historically speaking, Jeff Jackson's teams at Notre Dame, the ones that have been really good and have gotten one seed, and I'm writing about this for tomorrow, have kind of bombed out of the NCAA tournament in spectacular fashion. And his teams that kind of sneak in there and get a three or a four seed end up being in the Frozen Four. It's a really funny dynamic at Notre Dame. But, you know, watching them early in the year, I just didn't know if they were consistent enough to put together a string of games that could, and I know you only got to win two games to get to the Frozen Four, but when you're playing two really good teams, I didn't think they could do it because they were, you know, at the first half of the season, they were giving up, they weren't just giving up three-on-ones and two-on-ones, they were giving up like two-on-zeros. And they were leaving Cal Peterson, who's very good, just totally hung out to dry. But they really shored that up in the second half. And, you know, we've seen, other than that real clunker in the Hockey semi, they're really good, and they're playing in top form at the right time of the year.
Jake Brown, who covers Irish hockey for Irish Illustrated, our guest on WSBT Radio. I remember in 08, and I remember in 11 when the Irish made the Frozen Four. There were a lot of Notre Dame fans that didn't follow hockey a whole lot, jumped on the bandwagon with the games on national TV. The Irish ended up having a great following, and I assume that's going to be the case again this weekend. So I asked this question based on the fact there's probably going to be a few people that haven't watched many hockey games that the Irish have played this year. But you mentioned Cal Peterson, the Irish goaltender, first captain in the 49-year varsity history of Notre Dame hockey. How important is he to the success of this team?
They will only go as far as he takes them. I mean, they obviously have some other good players. Anders Bjork was one of 10 finalists for the Hobie Baker Award and all of that. Andrew Ogilvie's had a fantastic season. And there's draft picks all over the lineup. But if Cal has a bad game, they're not going to win. I mean, it's really as simple as that. If he has a mediocre game, they're probably not going to win. Because Denver is that good. I watched Denver blow the doors off of Penn State to get into the Frozen Four. And they're as prolific a team as Notre Dame has seen all year. Jeff Jackson said the other day he thinks they're the best team in the country. The rankings obviously reflect that. They're so good offensively. If Cal isn't at the top of his game, they're not going to win. I don't see an avenue for them to win if Cal plays poorly.
Outside of Peterson, then, is there another player where you could make that claim for this team? Another player that you say they can't do without him?
Well, Anders Bjork, obviously. You hear a lot at this time of year about, you know, getting scoring depth and all that. And Notre Dame has done a nice job of bringing along some of those secondary players to contribute late in the season. You got to have that. But I'm a big believer on these types of stages. Your stars got to be your stars. And Anders Bjork and Andrew Ogilvie were fantastic in the regional round. They have to be again. I think if Anders or Ogilvie get shut down, shut out, it's going to be difficult for Notre Dame to win against a team as deep and as talented as Denver. Those guys have to play well. And I would throw Jake Evans in there, too. He's got to win a lot of faceoffs, and he's got to set some guys up, too. They have to get – their stars have to rise to the occasion on Thursday night.
Let's go back to Peterson, actually, for a second, Jake, because you've been around and covered the program for several years now. Where does he rank in terms of goalies that you've seen play in this program?
That's a great question. There's been some really good ones. I would say in terms of maybe athletic ability and just talent, he might be the best of them. And I came on after David Brown, who was very good before I started covering the team. But you know, I think I would basically put it between three guys, right? It would be Jordan Pierce, it would be Stephen Summerhays, and then it would be Cal. And I think on talent, I would say Cal is certainly the best. Jordan Pierce, man, he was the goalie that year. They won 31 games and ended up losing in the first round of the NCAA tournament to DaVinci State. I guess I can't think of what year that was off the top of my head, but Jordan was really good. I saw him make some crazy saves back in the old Joy Center. But Cal, I think, is probably the best of them on talent. And if he comes back next year, he's going to break every record any of those guys set.
2009 was the year that they lost to Bemidji State in a huge upset in the first round. Mm-hmm. Jake Brown from Irish Illustrated is our guest. So, two-part question. Cal Peterson, Anders Bjork, Andrew Ogilvie, Jake Evans, those four names cannot be the answer to the next questions, okay? It's got to be someone off the board. Who do you feel like are players that are under the radar, one at the forward position and one on defense, that probably don't get enough attention mainly because of the high-end talent on this hockey team?
Okay, that's a great question. It allows me to, you know, show off my knowledge a little bit.
I'm just putting it on the tee, my friend. It's like Augusta National, first tee, let her rip.
I love it. You know, one of my favorite players as a forward who I love watching play is Jack Jenkins. He seems to me like if I were playing against him, he would really, really annoy me because he plays hard all the time. He's going to get in on the boards and mix things up. He's maybe going to score a goal on you every once in a while, and you're going to look at him and go, why do we just let that guy score? Because he's certainly got some skill, but he's so much effort, and I love that about him. Since he's been at Notre Dame, I feel like every shift he takes, I look out there and I go, man, that guy is buzzing around.
That would have been my choice.
I'll throw Jack Jenkins out there for the forwards. And on defense, you know, Andrew Peak, I think, you know, has been really good this year as a freshman. But I think a guy, even though he's a draft pick that gets kind of overlooked, is Dennis Gilbert. He doesn't have a goal this year. And, you know, what a time. Maybe he throws one into the net, in the frozen form for his first goal of the season. But I think he's really come along as the season has gone on, and one of the reasons they've been able to shore up their defense and not leave Cal hanging out so much is because Dennis has played a lot better. I remember a game probably right around the Christmas break where he was in the penalty box a bunch, and I was, you know, kind of looking around thinking, man, this guy is not playing well. And since then, he's been great, and I think they're going to need, you know, his physical presence, certainly, to knock some Denver guys around a little bit.
I have a general question that maybe both of you guys can bounce back and forth a little bit because you're both around college hockey specifically a lot more than I am. Do, when you get to this time of year, NCAA tournament, now Frozen Four, every game is single elimination. Do coaches kind of change their style of play? Do they get more conservative in general?
Yeah, I would say they probably, if anything, tighten up their line changes stuff. I mean, you know, if you're really confident in three lines and you've got a fourth line of guys you maybe don't want to run out there all the time, in the regular season, you can't afford to not be running four lines usually because you're going to wear your guys out eventually. But this time of year, you know, you can get it down to three lines. You can get it down to maybe just two defensive pairings that you're comfortable with and mix and match after that. And that's kind of where Notre Dame is anyway because Cal Burke's been hurt. Yep. They've been basically dressing an extra defenseman on the fourth line and kind of mixing and matching to give guys a break. So that's, I think, where you probably see it the most.
I think he's exactly right, and I'll just give you an example, Sean. When you think about overtime against Lowell back on March the 26th, that regional final, the Irish are in overtime, and Jeff Jackson has to put his players on the ice first. Lowell's the higher seed. They're the home team, so they get to match, which is an advantage in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff just has a way of maneuvering his lines, and I actually asked him about this on the plane, right? He said, you know what? My ability to get my matchups, even though I have to put my players on the ice first, I learned that from a conversation with Scotty Bowman, arguably the greatest coach in NHL history. And he just uses so many individuals to gather information, and now a lot of coaches grab from Jeff Jackson. But when they scored the game-winning goal in overtime, Anders Bjork is normally on the first line, Andrew Ogilvie is on the second line. They were on the ice together for that shift, and Bjork set up Ogilvie for the game winner. Huh. So Jeff just has a way of maneuvering his lines to give his team the best chance to succeed.
Interesting.
Yeah, all right. He does a fabulous job, without question. So what's going to be the difference, Jake? If the Irish are going to win this game, I think you're exactly right. The Stars have to play well. Cal's going to have to be that brick wall for this team. Do you feel like there's something that might be the difference maker in this game to allow the Irish to get to the championship game for the second time in program history?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of the usual stuff, the stuff that you know, Jeff talks about week in, week out. They got to control the puck. I mean, if you let Denver skate at you all night because you're turning the puck over at either of the blue lines, it's going to be a really, really long night. They'll bury you. So they have to control the puck. They have to, you know, be willing to dump it in and go chase it down and do the dirty work along the walls. And, you know, while I am a huge believer that the Stars have to play really well for Notre Dame, maybe the Stars can set up some of the guys that we haven't been talking about. Maybe Dylan Malmquist scores a goal. Maybe Cam Morrison, who obviously was really good in the regionals, pitches in with a goal. You know, maybe it's not about Anders Bjork scoring two goals. Maybe it's about him setting up a couple, something along those lines. You know, it's really cliche, but it's going to have to be a complete team effort if only half the roster shows up to play, or if some guys are awed by the moment. Denver will make them look silly. But, you know, as well as they've been playing, I have no doubt they'll be ready to go.
As you were talking, I just noticed something on Twitter. For people that haven't been to an Irish hockey practice, normally at the end of practice, they practice shootouts. Everybody gets a chance to shoot on the goaltender, and if you score, you get to go again. You miss, you don't get to participate, and the winner in the end gets the championship belt. They have a championship belt. And if the goalies stop all the guys second time around, they win the belt. And, Jake, you'll appreciate this. I just saw a video. Guess who was a part of the shootout today at the United Center?
I saw this earlier. Didn't JJ take a swing at it himself?
Jeff Jackson, a goaltender at Michigan State, grabbed the puck and was a part of the shootout. But the video doesn't show whether he scored or not, so I can't wait to hear how the story ends.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, if anyone let in a goal to Coach Jackson, that's not a good look for the goaltender.
Jake, they're going to lose their scholarship, let's be honest.
No doubt.
Hey, real quick, you said you got a story tomorrow at Irish Illustrated. What are you going to focus on?
Yeah, basically, I have one up right now kind of about Andrew Ogilvie's growth in the offseason and how it led to his breakout year. I thought it was some interesting stuff. And then tomorrow, the game preview is essentially the premise is, you know, Notre Dame is a regular here. They've been to this stage now three times in the last 10 years. Only two programs have done more or made more Frozen Four appearances in the last decade. But they're kind of missing that one piece, which is obviously a national championship, and it's kind of, you know, Coach Jackson and a couple of the players' perspectives on what they need to do and what it would mean if they were able to finally take that last step here this weekend.
IrishIllustrated.com for the latest on the Irish hockey team. He is Jake Brown. He'll be at the United Center tomorrow, and hopefully once the Irish win Thursday, I look forward to on Friday you buying me a piece of deep dish pizza.
We'll see. We'll see about that. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'll go for something different than deep dish pizza on Friday. I'll have to think about my options. But.
Well, whatever you want to buy me is perfectly fine.
All right.
Hey, thanks for doing this. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good.
There you go, Jake Brown from Irish Illustrated, covering the Fighting Irish hockey team each and every year. Notre Dame and Denver again. Start time, 9:30 South Bend time. If we start by 10, I'll be very, very excited. Yeah. I'm not expecting this game to get started anytime before 10. And again, that's just assuming the first game doesn't go into overtime.
Yeah, at least you guys will be on Central time, though. You've got that hour on us over here.
I don't know about you, as a play-by-play guy, especially for hockey, I broadcast better when I'm tired.
Do you?
Because it's so easy to get wrapped up in hockey. You want to go fast and it just slows you down a little bit.
I never thought about it that way.
Now, baseball, I want to be awake
a little
because
more amped up. Yeah.
There's a little less action in baseball, if you've noticed, than in hockey.
Right. Very true. Very true.
When you were broadcasting the Irish women's basketball team, and of course you were there in St. Louis on the call when the Irish won the national championship, I'd like to know, when you got deep into the tournament, when you got into the championship game, it was close going down to the wire. Ruth hit the free throws to put them in front in Purdue and took a long shot that didn't work out.
Right.
Was it easy to stay emotionally not involved with what was going on? Because we're a little different than the national broadcasters. They don't have a rooting interest. You're around the players. You're around the coaches. We become fans of the team we broadcast for. Was it easy to separate?
I don't think it was, especially for me, because again, that was my first year and all, and that, and just that entire ride, there was so much on that, I guess, and it was pretty tough.
First time ever, emotionally, I was having a hard time staying in check in that Lowell regional final 9 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's never really happened before. I mean, you get the butterflies, you get a little nervous because, again, you know the players, you know the coaches, and you want to see them succeed. And you're invested because you travel on the bus, you fly on the planes. You're basically bottom of the totem pole on the staff, but you're kind of on the staff.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it's really strange because in that game against Lowell, I was having a hard time emotionally staying out of the game. In fact, I said I listened to some of the game. That was not very good, so I'm really happy I get another chance. But if they're fortunate enough to win Thursday, Saturday, you're going to have to teach me how to get through that, because that's going to be a long 36 hours leading up to a national championship game. I hope I have to worry about it. But, yeah, it was just weird. I was having a hard time getting out of the moment. I think a lot of times when you have an analyst, they talk so you can take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
When you're by yourself like we are, you have no one to kind of take over for 20 seconds so you could just take a deep breath, relax. You just have to keep going. I think that might have had something to do with it.
Well, and I do remember at the end of that game, you talked about Ruth Riley being at the free throw line. There were a couple of different things. One, it was a very similar situation to the end of the Big East Conference championship game when they lost to UConn. She went to the line. She only made one out of two there. And in the situation against Purdue, she goes to the line. She hits the first one. Then Purdue calls the timeout, and they're trying to ice her. And then she ends up hitting the second one as well right after that timeout. And then Purdue has to inbound the ball. There was no timeout after that. So kind of that pause. And I remember, obviously not everything that I said, but I remember that I was kind of drawing that comparison to that situation at the end of the Big East championship game. Very similar situation, almost the exact same amount of time was left on the clock. And so I remember kind of getting into that. And then from there, everything just sort of happened because Purdue makes a couple of quick passes. They get it up court.
Mm-hmm.
And that shot from where I was sitting, the shot that Katie Douglas takes right at the end, was happening right in front of me. And I thought it was going through.
Really?
It looked like it was online. Wow. And then it hits the rim, bounces off the backboard, and bounces off, and that was it.
Didn't they almost travel?
Yeah.
It was kind of like,
and
the
I think
Carolina,
I said that as well, because she inbounds it. I can't remember the player, but I remember saying she nearly walked. And then when you look at the replays, boom, it looks like she probably did walk. And then she gets it to Douglas. Yeah. And yeah.
Great memories. All right, back to Fighting Irish football talk next. You'll hear from wide receiver coach Delvon Alexander on WSBT.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett, 22 minutes in front of the top of the hour, Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Three Notre Dame assistant coaches met the media today over at the Goob. One of those, wide receiver coach Delvon Alexander, in his first season as a member of Brian Kelly's staff, came from Arizona State. Sean, you were around Delvon during the media session today, and let's hear from Coach Alexander. First, he discusses what he has seen from the wide receiving core so far this spring.
I like that we're smart.
I like that guys, you know, give great effort, and I like the fact that, you know, that the guys are making the adjustments that we're asking them to make. You know, with us only having 9 practices, it seems like a lot, but we're trying to put in an offense. We're trying to identify skills and fundamentals, and then, you know, from there is when you'll go into, you know, what you're going to use the guy for in the season. So we're kind of just putting in our system and asking them to understand it and adapt to it, and they're doing a great job there.
Well, first, it's got to be fun watching his wide receivers catch the football from Brandon Wimbush.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it's also got to be nice for a first-year wide receiver coach at Notre Dame to look out there and see Equanimeous St. Brown as your best wide receiver and a pretty good guy for the guys to learn from.
And that's a big thing because, again, he's the most experienced of this group that they have coming back this year. And when you look at a guy like him, consistency is the biggest thing that Alexander was talking about today that he needs to bring now. He had a nice breakthrough year last year, but be more consistent day in and day out, game in and game out this coming up season. And one of the things he's working on this spring.
Well, Alexander today talked about the receiving core, more experience than they were a year ago at this time. But Alexander says that experience is not as important with this new offense. Give a listen to Delvon Alexander.
Experience is relevant to what sometimes, you know, to playing time, to, you know, second spring. They've got no experience in our offense and the things that we're doing, you know, some of the things that we're doing, some of it's similar. So as far as experience go, we're gaining experience, and I'm asking them to use my experience and learn from the things that I'm teaching them, different than what they may have done in the past.
Sounds like the receivers are playing here, there, and everywhere. They're learning all the positions so they can be ready for the start of the season when there's going to be a lot of moving parts.
They are, and that's one thing that he talked about as well, that you think about the little guys, the smaller 5'9", you know, like a Fink and those kind of guys as a slot receiver, but you see them working on the outside sometimes, and they are mixing and matching and finding out what works, working on creating mismatches and all that kind of stuff. And even, you know, when you go back to the experience, though, I understand what he's saying. We've got a new offense, so their experience, and it's not a completely new offense, but their experience last year not being as important because they're learning new things this spring. But at the same time, again, they went from 2 receptions as a group, the 6 guys, for 8 yards a couple of years ago, to 128 receptions for 2,000 yards and 19 touchdowns last year. So even though there are new things that they're learning this year, that's going to mean a lot, especially when you're talking about working with a new quarterback like Brandon Wimbush.
Good thing for Alexander. He's familiar with Chip Long, the offensive coordinator, from their time together at Arizona State. And Alexander said today the experience he has working with new offensive coordinator Chip Long is more important than any experience his wide receivers have.
Oh, it's big time because, you know, Chip doesn't have to remind me as much. You know, he's got to remind me. He's got to coach me hard like he's supposed to. But at the same time, I've got his back, and I can help him with some things that we may have done in the past and little subtle tweaks that help us continue to teach the offense the right way.
Delvon Alexander, Fighting Irish wide receiving coach, met the media earlier today over at the Goog. And here's Alexander on if the new offensive tweaks are a big adjustment for his wide receiving core.
It is to a point that they have to adjust to the vocabulary. You know, we have to speak the same language. So when they're taking notes and whenever we're communicating, it's about the vocabulary. You know, they can't try to blend vocabulary. It has to be really specific because when I'm asking them to do something, it's, you know, there's a catchphrase, you know, and there are comments that I make that they have to respond to and not a long sentence.
How has that progression gone up to this point?
I think it's been really good. It's just a matter of focusing. You know, sometimes when they get tired or when they start to communicate with each other, they start to use old verbiage, and we need to make sure that we're on the same page, you know, for 15 practices.
Delvon Alexander, Fighting Irish wide receiver coach, meeting the media earlier today. It is about 16 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you. I've got to sign off. I got a bus to catch.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Have fun. Have a great call. It should be exciting this weekend.
Looking forward tomorrow. To it. Yeah, heading to Chicago tonight. Get set for the Frozen Four National Semifinal tomorrow, 9:30 on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. It's also on national TV on ESPN. I noticed some outlets are saying ESPN2. I'm 99.9% sure it's on ESPN. I think that might have been passed along incorrectly. But either go with number one or number two. You'll find
it'll be on Irish. One of them, yeah.
That's exactly right. So, Irish Illustrated Hour is coming up next hour, but Sean has more Sports Beat coming up next. But first, a check of the forecast.
Fine, they all do that. But my point is...
Budweiser's weekday sports beat. We'll have the Irish Illustrated Hour coming up here very shortly. As Darren said, he's checking out. I'm Sean Stiers, checking back in as we get ready to wrap up and wind down this 6 o'clock hour on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. And it is, what time is it? 6:48. We're 12 minutes away from 7 o'clock. A great deal of talk in the past couple of days has been made about Brian Kelly's comments about DeShone Kizer. And the specific quote that has so many people fired up is Kelly saying, again, this is a quote, "Well, he should still be in college, you know, but the circumstances are such that you have to make business decisions. And, you know, he felt like it was in his best interest, and I'm going to support him in his decision. But the reality of it is he needs more football. He needs more time to grow in so many areas, not just on the field, but off the field." The two Tims, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, they're going to join me at 7 o'clock for the Irish Illustrated Hour. We're going to talk about Kelly's comments, the reaction to them. We'll also let you hear Kelly's comments from that interview with Sirius NFL Radio. Everyone seems to have an opinion on not only those comments, but also Kaiser's abilities, the NFL draft, and all that stuff, which is fast approaching. Mike Mayock from NFL Network is no different. He was at DeShone Kizer's Notre Dame Pro Day recently, and I caught up with him afterwards, and he took a few minutes to kind of talk about Kizer and what he saw from him at that pro day. So right now, we are going to let you hear some of that on Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Just first of all, you know, your first overall impressions of what you saw from him today?
Kind of what I expected. He's a big, strong kid that when he gets everything lined up correctly, the ball comes out beautifully. So in a draft where I don't think there's a quarterback that's ready to play next year, there's four or five guys with potential first-round talent, but he's what I thought he was. He's a big, strong kid, and he's got some inconsistencies that he's got to work out.
Accuracy was probably the biggest question that he had coming out of the combine. Do you think that he addressed that enough today?
Again, when I say inconsistencies, it starts with the footwork, and it permeates with the accuracy. So I think what you saw today, 63 throws, and his arm, like for instance, his arm is bigger than Trubisky from North Carolina. His accuracy isn't as good. Okay, so people are going to be looking at that accuracy very closely. I thought it was a really solid workout. I just think he's got to continue to work on his inconsistencies.
Well, he looked like his footwork was better than at the combine anyway. Would you agree with that?
I think, you know, he's working out of script. 63 plays, they've practiced, which is fine. They all do that. But my point is, he knew exactly what he was doing. He's been doing it for the last week or two. He did a really nice job with it.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer
that your feet and your eyes have to tie together as a quarterback, and he's learning that. And it's just a work in progress. It's not going to happen overnight.
Just from what you've seen, do you think that wasn't necessarily a big focus when he was here at Notre Dame?
I wouldn't say that. I watched a bunch of his games as a starter, and every game you see a bunch of throws that really intrigue you. Big arm throws that he can make from any platform. But within that game, you'd also see inconsistencies, especially in the pocket and especially with accuracy. And he's working through a lot of that right now, and it's getting better. It just takes time.
Well, and this will be the last time, real. I guess he can have some individuals and stuff like that, but I mean, for the most part,
again, it goes back to 90% of it is really the film. Now what they're trying to see is just his adjustment under center, his footwork. Is it getting better? It is. That's positive. Do we want to work with this kid? Or you're going to have dinner with him at night? You're going to watch film with him? You know, that's the other part with the quarterback is just, do you want to go into the draft room and bang the table for the kid? Not just the football player, the kid. Is this a kid that's the face of our franchise that we can work with? And I think that'll be a positive for him.
Well, and that's the intangible side seems mm-hmm. to be there for
right.
the most part.
Exactly. I think he'll work hard. He's a very smart kid. I think he'll pick up what NFL teams ask him to.
He looked like, just casually again, seeing the combine stuff on video mm-hmm. and on NFL Network mm-hmm. and then seeing him today, he looked like he was maybe kind of driving with the back foot a little bit more. Did you see that?
I just think most of the quarterbacks are more comfortable when they're working out at home on their pro day than when they're at the combine. The combine's a little different. You've got a little different kind of pressure. You're getting two throws and out. Next guy's in. You've got all the pro scouts sitting right there in your face. You're throwing to different wide receivers. There's a whole different level of pressure. You come out here and it's a script and you're comfortable and you're ready to go. And I think most kids are more confident. And I think that's what you're talking about is you see his confidence come through.
And again, that's Mike Mayock from NFL Network, former NBC Notre Dame football analyst. He hadn't necessarily seen DeShone Kizer in the Notre Dame capacity when he was on NBC, but he's a guy who studies just a ton of game film, and he watches a lot of guys. And when you listen to Mike Mayock, he's essentially saying some of the same stuff that Brian Kelly was saying. He's talking about inconsistencies. He's using different words, though, than what Brian Kelly was saying, talking about it a little differently. And both saying that Kizer needs more work, but Kelly's Kizer's head coach, and what he says, and specifically the words that he uses, carry a lot different impact. And we have obviously seen that and found that out over these last couple of days as the impact of Kelly's words from the conversation that he had. And we're going to be talking about this in the next hour on the Irish Illustrated Hour with Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley. But to kind of get you started here a little bit, the question Kelly was asked the other day by Bruce Murray on the Sirius NFL radio show was this: how much better did he being Kizer, how much better did he get as a quarterback from when you got him to now that he's leaving? And how much is there in your mind in terms of that gap from where he is right now to his ceiling? So that was the question that Bruce Murray asked Brian Kelly, and here was Brian Kelly's response to that question.
Well, he still should be in college. I mean, I think he's, you know, but the circumstances are such that you have to make business decisions. And, you know, he felt like it was in his best interest, and I'm going to support him in his decision. But the reality of it is he needs more football. He needs more time to grow in so many areas, not just on the field, but off the field. And he's a great kid. He's got great character. And character, you don't change character much. And he's got great character, so you're not going to have an issue there with that young man. But he's going to continue to learn, and he'll learn with great coaches around him, a great mentor around him. So there's a huge amount of growth that will happen every single day with DeShone Kizer.
Does that sound damning? Does it sound negative? Does it sound like Kelly's blaming Kizer for last year's 4-8 record? All those things have been said about Kelly over the past couple of days since he said that during that interview. Of course, it's only part of the interview he did with Bruce Murray and Brady Quinn, of course, a former Notre Dame quarterback. Coming up after 7 o'clock here on WSBT, again, I'll be joined by Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley, the two Tims, the Irish Illustrated Hour. We're going to let you hear more of Kelly's comments on DeShone Kizer, and we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about some position battles the Irish have going on this spring. You'll hear from Irish assistants Tom Reese and Harry Keystand and a whole lot more. So that is all coming up during the Irish Illustrated Hour, which starts at 7 o'clock. We'll be on from 7 to 8 here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Right now, a timeout. When we come back, we will wrap up Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Sean Steyers. I'm going to be joined by Tim Priester and Tim O'Malley for the Irish Illustrated Hour coming up after the top of the hour. Right now, though, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is brought to you by Harold Ziegler Ford Lincoln in Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Road, or at z4.com, by Legacy Heating and Air, by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Sport Clips. You watch sports, they cut air. It's perfect. Sports Clips. It's good to be a guy. We are coming up on the top of the hour on 96.1 FM WSBT. The O'Malley's sitting in here right now. I imagine you've got a little something to say about the whole Brian Kelly thing. Am I guessing in the right direction?
Probably
me more strongly than Tim, but that's just kind of my nature.
So we're going to talk about that. And again, we're going to have... Did you get to hear the entirety of the interview by any chance, either one of you guys?
Yeah, and we read the transcript too.
Okay, yeah, and I know the transcript is kind of out there, but again, we're going to have the at least the entire part where DeShone Kizer is addressed. I know there was more to the interview than just the DeShone Kizer part, but we'll have the whole thing where they start talking about DeShone Kizer so we can hear the context, because I know, kind of talking to Priester earlier and what we talked about yesterday, context does have a large part, play a large part in this whole thing. So we're going to talk about all that in the next hour. So we'll take a break right now, and the Irish Illustrated Hour will begin after 7 o'clock right here on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, South Bend.